welcome to another episode of Polycast. I'm Wouter Snijders, also known as Locutus on the forums. I'm here with Dan Q Quick.
Hi, Wouter.
Hi, Dan. And unfortunately, Imran and Maki couldn't make it. I'm afraid they said a few too many bad things about Dan, so we had to let them go. But we found someone else to take their place. He's our brand new off-topic moderator, known as Drogue on forums. Oh. Hey, Drogue.
So, Will, is your last name pronounced Brambley? Is that right? Did I get that right?
Exactly. Brambley or Bramley, anything like that. We're never quite sure whether the B's silent in it or not. I do think we need to have mention of colonization coverage.
Yeah. I mean, that was announced in early last October. It's nice to see that the threat has been resurrected all of a sudden, although some people only just recently, such as Dis, realized that it was an old thread. But, you know, better late than never.
Yeah, I have to say I didn't realize it was an old thread. So I just notice now.
I can count on one hand the number of times I've played the game, and on two hands the number of hours I've played the game.
Shame on you.
I was too busy playing the original Civ.
Oh,
yeah,
come
actually,
on.
I'll agree with that as well. But then initially, I was playing Civ at the moment, I was like, fine.
I don't even own a copy of Colonization.
Oh, Dan, what are we going to do with you?
So many have asked that question for so many years and come up with nothing. What hope do you have?
I love Dan's ironic voice, it's brilliant.
Yes, I am brilliant. You can stay.
So this week on the show we have a Q&A by Sid Meier that was on GameSpot. We talk about how Civ has been doing in the game charts, about very short about the Warlords demo game, about the top 10 franchises in gaming history, and about the award season that's coming up. In the modcast, we're talking about AI difficulty, and we talk about if Civ 4 governments are communist. We have fact that Postcount was restored, and we'll talk about all the new staff members that have joined us in the past week or 2 weeks or so.
In this week's Senate, we look at double crossing and the rules of diplomacy in Civ 4, whether you should be allowed to attack and do what you want with impunity, or whether there should be certain rules. And we also look at whether you should ever start a war without catapults, i.e. before you have invented catapults.
And finally, in our interview this week, we have Kurt Sibling, or the first part of it anyway.
Sid Meier chronicles Civilization. So I guess there's this line about, with the exception of the semi-sequel Civilization Call to Power and some ports, all Civilization titles have been developed under the direction of Sid. I guess we're forgetting Call to Power 2. I realize it didn't have Civilization in the title, but come on now. Tor, what are you doing?
The Call to Power semi-sequel bit, though. So.
We didn't start off very well. For shame. And thank you, Sid, for now I can now source you for the adage, time flies when you're having fun. See, I've said that before, and people have said to me, who says that? And now I can say Sid does.
Are these people who would know who Sid is, though?
I really don't see how that's relevant. And I see the part about where GameSpot asked him if he was concerned about older Civ titles would be received well, and fonts about, well, won't have the visual wow factor, but they hold their own through gameplay. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Yeah. I mean, if people buy Chronicles, presumably they'd like to have the whole spectrum, and if they haven't played one of the original games, one of the first few titles, then how are they going to know? They shouldn't complain until they've tried it. Don't knock it till you try it.
The bit that got to me, though, is the complete non-mention of Alpha Centauri anywhere in that. But that's probably just because it's me.
Yeah, it's not officially a Civ game, I guess.
No, but it is. I suppose I always thought of it as a sequel, and as a Civ Meier game as well.
Electronic Arts! Oh, that BAFTA from that BAFTA from before keeps turning into something else. You know, for our sci-fi fans out there, like myself, are you a sci-fi fan? Well, of course you are. The answer is yes, by the way.
Of course, of course.
You know, like with the original Civ titles, I kind of compare that to TOS, the original series of Star Trek. Its visual and special effects may not be as impressive as the series came after it, but it holds its own in storylines, just like Civ holds its own in terms of content and enjoyment.
Possibly, though, I'd probably dispute that with Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm never a fan of the
first
series.
Not sure. Ooh. If you like Tribbles and, what is it, worlds that are run like Mafia or all silly storylines like that.
I never even got that far to really notice them, to be honest.
And I just lost Wouter and Will. Oh, no.
Yeah, there's not, like, it's an interesting
that
interview.
That joke never gets old.
I think it's an interesting interview, but all the sort of things he's saying are things we know before. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
That was one, but there's nothing really new to the community there.
That's the thing that stood out to me as well. There's nothing that we didn't know.
Although I did like his comment with being asked about Civ titles being trans over to consoles and talks about the N-Gage port on Civ 2. Did you see what Sid said about that? Burn. Firaxis wasn't part of the development process, so it was ill-fated from the beginning.
Wow.
I gloss over that, I think. Oh yeah, I see it now.
Also, this Soren Johnson's card game is about. Apparently, it's a game for Civ that goes with Chronicles.
Indeed, yes. I own a copy of Chronicles, but I haven't had a chance to play it for a number of reasons. One, I really don't know anybody in real life that still plays Civ games, and even when they did, I think it was to humor me. But also, I'm not very good at card games. I've been pretty bad, except since Go Fish. I was pretty good at that.
Oh,
dear.
Poor Dan.
Although I am mediocre to poor at Frank Zoo.
I have to say I have no idea what that is at all.
Neither
Actually, I'm kind of hoping they release this card game on its own, because I have all the Civs, apart from Civ 3, which I keep being told not to buy. So I really have no need to buy the whole Chronicles.
Yeah.
Especially not for a card game.
I'd love to have the card game as well, but I doubt they'd be releasing it separately.
I suppose, technically, Civ Chronicles could make a good present for someone who's not yet obsessed with Civ.
Well, if they're not already obsessed with Civ, then who are they? Oh, wait.
People in real life.
I was going to say people under 25, but that's not entirely true, I guess. I don't know anyone in real life who's under 25 and who plays Civ.
Really?
No, strangely enough.
Actually, thinking about it, neither do I. That's quite worrying.
Neither do I, but we've been through this already, that's right.
Yes.
Talks about how the design process for Civ 4 was a 180-degree turn from previous Civ titles where multiplayer was developed and focused on first before the single-player aspect. And it shows to the betterment, I think. And Sid also alludes to the 3D graphics as major changes. Now, I wouldn't categorize the following as a major change, but I think we've talked about this previously, but I would think the incorporation of religion in Civ 4 as a significant and cultural borders in Civ 3 before that as a notable addition, regardless of what the general consensus on Civ 3 might be for some. And nobody disagrees with me, so they're saying nothing. Hooray!
Where was I when reading this article? I don't remember any of this.
Kind of thing as well.
Is there a page 2?
Whereabouts is it? I can't see that at all. I'm thinking I must be going blind here.
Oh, I see something about 3D now. It's just below the pretty picture of the Chronicle set.
So I guess we could summarize by saying, unless there's something else, that everyone should read this article because GameSpot needs more traffic.
Pretty much.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They'll go under without your support.
I doubt it.
I would agree with that, too. I have.
Civilization 4, 14th on October PC game sales in North America. Wow.
What's quite funny about this? Number 13 is Desperate Housewives.
You know,
it is,
yes. I think it's all in all a decent list of titles, except that one. Like,
well, I don't know, The Sims 2 Pets tops the list?
Well, you know, they're just milking that franchise for all it's worth.
And number 6, we have The Sims 2 Glamour Life Stuff. Number 9, just The Sims 2.
Yeah.
And number 20, Sims 2 Nightlife. I don't know.
I guess so. The list is The Sims and Company. I guess that's how we.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, at least it is the Australian hot selling list. The last time I checked that, there were 9 Sim games in the top 10.
Why? Why? I don't get that.
There's something seriously wrong with Aussies.
Go back to Sim City, please. Please. But what I find even more interesting than Civ 4 still being, you know, 14th out of 20th, you know, more than a year after its release, that's great, but Warlords is not on there. And released just past July. So maybe it will be on the list in November or December as, you know, those sales charts comes out, you know,
not
people...
Not really.
What
it
people...
was on 18th place last month, or in September, actually, because this is the October list, and it was, I think, 14th or 12th in August. So it's long since disappeared from the listing.
It's possible to come back.
True. There could be a couple... I can imagine most people have either just brought Civ and aren't really ready to add it onto Warlords yet because they're still getting used to it. Or it's sold as a pack, and so it's just counted as Civ 4.
The people who are interested in Warlords have already bought it. I think if you're interested in Warlords at all, you're going to buy it when it's new.
Well,
probably.
Well, people seem to be discovering Civ 4 for the first time, perhaps, if Civ 4 is still 14th out of 20th position, more than a year later. Or
yeah, sure, but I mean, if an expansion pack is going to sell maybe 20% of the original game, so if Civ 4 is only in 14th place, I don't want to know how far Warlords has sunk.
Mm. What strikes me, though, is I don't know if it's the same on your webpage, but online there's a big advert for Civ 4 Warlords right next to it.
Well, there isn't for me because I use Adblock, but...
You know, I mean, I think anybody, there might be some people also rediscovering the series after hiatus or a total newcomer. I think any number of fanboys or girls of the series who have yet to pick up a copy are more likely than not insignificant. But, you know, Chronicles is not on this list, but it wasn't released yet. And, you know, we've got a couple months lag time here, so if Chronicles sales are high and people are going through the list and people are pointing out it's all Civ titles except... If they like what they see, they play Civ 4, they might go, I should get that. And also, it's holiday season. Tis the time of giving. You never know.
Tis the time of Medieval 2, Total War, of War, World of Warcraft, Warhammer 4000. I don't think Chronicles is going to be able to compete with those.
Mm.
Remember, it's a top 10. Only the very best gets in there in terms of sales numbers.
I was about to say,
yeah, there's 5 sim games in there, so.
Yeah, I think it's also the price, and it's such a, often so much in Chronicles that at that price, are there going to be many people buying it for presents?
Only if you love them.
That's the message of this podcast. If you love them, you'll buy them Chronicles.
And you'll buy it through a pulp. Oh, where'd that come from?
Hey, you shouldn't be coughing over that.
I was trying to look impartial.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't think anyone's going to be fooled.
No, no, neither do I.
I was convinced. Oh, wait. Put on your Warlords demo game in the making. I really don't have any notes on that, but I thought it was worthwhile to note that it is up and running, or trying to get up and running. If you're interested, go check it out.
Yeah, that's... pretty much all I have to say about it.
Sounds good.
Probably helps if you have Warlords.
Maybe.
Civilization 4 10th top video game franchise. Breathe, Dan. Breathe.
This struck me as... slightly strange again, but you look at some of the ones above them that I've never heard of, and which sounds quite strange to me as someone who tends to play quite a lot of games, and yet sort of there's no Quake, there's no just strikes as a bit of a strange list, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Civ is 10th on this list. I mean, 10, you know, if 2 to 5 is an insult, which it is, anything less than a 5 is an outrage. I mean, I appreciate that IGN noted the criteria for deciding this list. Let's see. Consider the overall importance of the franchise. Well, I think it's pretty easy to argue that Civ, if not founded, then at least revolutionized the God Game series. So that's taken care of. The strength of its library of titles and the excitement for future games in the series. Well, is there an end to Civ? No. Right?
Yep, I think you're exactly right on that. I mean, I can understand the top few. There are some good competitors, Mario, Zelda, Final Fantasy. But Civ definitely should be right up there.
And to make matters worse, kind of tying into a previous news item, you know, even if you had to put Sim higher on the list than Civ, Sim City should be a category unto itself, please. And if you're going to at least talk about the Sim, why is the whole blurb about the Sims? It's like Sim, notable titles, Sim City. What? Just kind of like tacked on at the end there.
Well, that's Sim Earth. They clearly mean the whole Sim series, but...
Sim Earth.
I'm not sure why they put that on there, but...
Well, there was also Sim Farm, which is better than Sim Earth. Not that that would be hard, but...
I think that, yeah, there are quite a few, actually, that strike me as a bit out of place. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons at 14, I would have thought that would have been a bit more of a top franchise. And Sonic a good 18 places behind Mario. Some people will never learn.
I actually thought it was surprising how low Command & Conquer was on the list. I mean, it was only 21.
True. So, how was it again you said they managed to decide this?
Considering the overall importance of the franchise, the strength of its library of titles, and the excitement for future games in the series. Now, I'm not sure if they're giving equal weighting to all of those, or if they've actually listed them in order for a reason they don't say, but I suppose with the second one, the strength of its library of titles, if we had to choose in the Civ franchise which was the least strong, no, I wouldn't say weakest here at all, but I suppose you could say Civ 3. But I wouldn't say weakest, for it's perhaps only in comparison to other Civ titles that Civ 3 you could say is weaker. I mean, the series isn't over yet, so you're not going to say weakest. But on its own, it's still a strong title, so I don't really know what these people were thinking, other than the fact that they love video game franchises and not computer game franchises, and that is terrible. You should be ashamed of it.
Let's just get one thing clear here. Civ 3 sucked.
Send it all hate mail.
I have to stand out of this discussion. I have to remain out of this discussion, having never played it.
How convenient for you.
I know.
Consider yourself very, very lucky.
I'm just still shocked about Quake not being on that list at all.
I'm going through the list now. I hadn't actually done that before, but how many games are there on here that are PC only? I think Civ is just about the only one.
Half-Life?
The list is very... Half-Life. But it's very much biased against console games, I get the idea.
Mm. I mean, higher on the list other than Civ is a number of titles that just... I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty good list for the most part. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit silly to throw the whole Sim series together with The Sims and all the other Sim games. But that's a good series. Metroid is it's a pretty good series. Resident Evil, you can't argue with Warcraft.
No, but
Mario and Zelda.
Yeah, Resident Evil, that's just disturbing, though. That should be on there. Be gone!
I should possibly be a little lower down.
Castlevania? Yeah, what's this Castlevania?
Yeah, that's the only one I haven't heard of.
Yeah. What a joke.
Actually, I haven't heard of that at all either. What's it even on?
Really old game, I see. Big Leap in 32-bit. That's a while ago.
Yeah, I have no idea. But
yeah, but as I said, it's very biased against console games, and well,
definitely.
I haven't really played many consoles.
Good for you.
That put me back in favor with Dan.
Yes, you can stay too. I combined GameSpy's Gamer Choice Awards and Voodoo Extreme's 2006 Best Expansion together, seeing as how their Gamer's Choice Awards, a bit of a popularity contest, ultimately.
Okay. Sure.
I see, along with Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords and the Civ 4 Expansion Warlords, other notable titles in the strategy category include Civ City Rome, Caesar 4, and my favorite title by name, DEF CON Everybody Dies.
That's brilliant.
It is the coolest title ever. That is true.
I feel so positive when I say that. It's all in how you say it, right? Everybody dies!
I think I'm going to have to get that game just to see what it is.
I don't want to spoil the ending, but...
You know, this is the first time I've ever seen a strategy game classification of Wars or otherwise broken up between RTS and non-RTS.
I can actually see that happening. Well, I think RTS is becoming more of a... almost a bit more action-focused and a bit more not really a pure strategy game, because it's not about sitting there thinking, it's about actions moving quickly, doing things in certain times. So I can see the logic in splitting the two of them up. They appeal to different types of people.
Well, that is very logic, but yeah, usually they are lumped together because TBS is just such a small market. I can remember actually a long time ago, 10 years ago, it was quite normal to separate the two. But well, as the TBS market got smaller, they just got thrown together more and more often.
Yeah, so now the TBS is split between city builders, turn-based games, hybrids, and a few strategy games we don't even know how to categorize. Well, if you don't know how to categorize them, how can we possibly learn? But given that, why is Rise of Nations, Rise of Legends in this category along with Warlords and Galciv 2? Rise of Nations, Rise of Legends is not. That's city builder, turn-based hybrid. It's on RTS. Why isn't it in the RTS category?
That's entirely true. But the same could be said for Medieval 2 Global War.
And then they've also got 1701 AD. It's also a real-time strategy game. What?
Yep.
Why isn't it in the RTS category? Hello?
This strikes me slightly strange.
Calling all editors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not much to say about that, other than the people really need to go and start voting for Civ.
And with the overall choice, if this is indeed gamers' choice voting, should not all of the titles listed for individual category awards be up for overall as well? I mean, GameSpy's list includes some expansions in the overall rating, such as the second Warhammer 40,000 Dawn of War add-on Dark Crusade and the sixth WoW EverQuest 2 expansion. Echoes of Fader, or however that's pronounced. I don't play EverQuest, so I don't care. So, what's going on? Where's Warlords?
Probably because some games don't have any chance of winning anyway?
Yep, I don't know. Probably seems quite true. But DEF CON's still there.
Well, that's good.
That's good. I'm actually voting for that one. Warlords is, well, it's pretty solid, but it's not that brilliant. So for me, it's either Galactic Civilizations 2 or DEF CON on base of name only.
Yes, with that name, nobody is cool enough to play that game with a title like that.
That's true.
And then with Voodoo Extremes 2006 Best Expansion, we've got about 2,500 ballots cast so far, and Civ 4 Warlords is, what's a nice word, trailing? With about 220 or so, 230, or just over 9% of the vote. Although it's in good company, it's not that all the other titles are, you know, 15, 20%, and Civ's kind of down there with just 9. Does anybody notice how this list of expansions starts off alphabetically but trails off?
I can't say that I have.
Well, there's a surprise, Mr. Observant.
Not the sort of thing I really pay attention to, then.
Well, it's either sloppy organization or something deliberate, because all of a sudden, Civ 4 Warlords is at the bottom, but...
Well, I guess they made it Warlords the keyword here?
Well, yes, so it's listed after Warhammer 40,000, Dawn of War, Dark Crusade, but why isn't Warlords after Black and White 2, Battle of the Gods? Because it's the parent title that seems to take priority with some other titles, except once we get to Warlords, it's at the bottom of the list. For shame. I should hand out For Shame awards.
I think they're just considering it Warlords. I think it's quite justifiable. Well, no, perhaps not.
I think this is quite a non-issue.
Yes, I think
who the hell gives a damn?
I was trying to find something to say about the stupid poll.
I think with the news, we can just quite simply say, this is the news, and it's there's just not that much to talk about this week.
Yeah. Well, actually, looking at the poll results, Warlords is third. You could say that's trailing by a long way, but if you look at most of the other games, they got less than 30 votes. And Warlords got 300. It's actually pretty good.
If you have any news for us, any news tips, contact us with news tips.
Head on over to apolton.net/about, look for contact us, or news@apolton.net also works.
And you can also PM.
Yes, you can. Locutus, DanQ, Snoopy369, and Illuminatus, one of us four, we'll get that up there.
In the Modcast, we talk about hot issues that have happened in the forums.
Well, this actually really related to a question that I had, which was in Civ 4, and actually in most of the scenes, when you go to higher difficulty levels, all it does is give the AI bonuses. It makes them play under rules that the humans don't. And there seems to be a really good discussion on how could you make the AI a better player rather than giving them bonuses so they can play under the same rules, but it can actually be a decent match.
Make them human. Oh, wait, we haven't reached that level of technology yet. I'm out of ideas.
Yes, we do. It's called multiplayer.
True, true. The multiplayer is a lot more of a hassle to try and play when you just want to go and have a quick game.
That's definitely true.
Actually, I think Blake needs some congratulations for all the work he's done. It does seem that he's got some quite amazing stuff he's managed to do to the AI to make it play towards that level.
Yes, it's very impressive. I can't say I've tried it very extensively, but it does look good, and people are very happy with it. People are better at this game than me, so...
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like such a newbie to Civ 4.
That's okay. You can join my club.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose with all the poly stuff, you probably don't have much time to actually play it anymore.
It's been that way for 10 years? And so I guess our Civ 4 government's communist. Well, this discussion starts off as a Sava rant. I think that's safe to say. About the government building everything from city buildings to wonders, and that the civics label merely hides the reality that what is in place are totalitarian regimes. Perhaps most literally, in a sense, this is true and always has been, as Lord Avalon notes, it's all done by the player as God. Or as Aaron adds, Civ is central planning to the nth degree. So I'm not really sure there's a problem here.
No, true. I think it's quite an interesting way to look at it, with the government building everything. But I'm sure there are other ways you could sort of look at it in the sense of it's about the government enabling other people. Sort of they add the resources and they decide or aid what needs to be built, and then other people actually go and pay for it and build it. I think there's many ways to look at it.
Yeah, I just wonder if getting into that might take away from the fun factor, or at least try to find a way to implement that so that the learning curve is not too high and the replayability interest is still there.
What I was more meaning was I think you could look at actually how it is at the moment and argue that it already does that. I don't think while you decide what to build that necessarily everything is built by the government and that nothing else happens. But yeah, I think it is one of those playable things.
I like Blake's name, the Playerian regime. Minus that Iron Fist part, perhaps arguably in earlier Civ titles, but I'm not so sure Iron Fist exactly, but the comment about an immortal player who may be good or evil or chaotic neutral or pretty much anything. I think or pretty much anything is a nice catch-all phrase.
Yeah,
true.
And Dr. Spike notes the Senate from Civ 2. Remember, you're under democracy and you try to go with someone and cross your fingers that the Hawk Party will intervene. I remember those days.
I have to say I don't. That's before my time.
I'm trying to forget them.
Were they really that bad?
No.
No, it just reminds us how old we are.
If you could do a convincing Nelson impression, that would have been the time.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. That was remarkably good. I'm impressed. I'm slightly scared.
I think Wouter founded that club, Scared of Dan.
Yeah.
Card-carrying member, anyway.
So, are we settled then? Civil governments are communist, but it really doesn't matter?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
So I guess we move on from our gaming modcast topics to community.
The OG Post started, Post Counts restarted.
Yes, and the thread that announced it got deleted. That is the highlight of the year.
I know, actually, I haven't noticed an influx of spam yet, except one thing we're all looking at is, did it actually stop any of this plus-one-ing on the community forum, or does that still go ahead as normal?
I think it's less.
Yes, I would agree. It's not gone, but it's nowhere near what it used to be.
So it seems all around to be a good move, then?
Yep.
Well, actually done, guys. Actually, I was going to ask on this, because some people have been made comments about this sort of being the brought in of the new sort of the new rulers and the new order and things that sort of things will start changing about that. What do you two guys kind of think of that? Is this the start of a lot of big changes on Poly, or?
What shall we say?
How about maybe or maybe not?
Sounds like a damn comment to me.
Well, I was going to say no comment, but that would be rude.
No, I think it's fair to say that a lot of things will change over time. But it will take some time to do everything we want to do. So initially it will be relatively small things, like increasing post counts again, although I think for some people that will be a big thing. But I think after a few months, maybe in January, February, we'll start to see the first really big changes. And, well, that's going to continue for a while, but we don't want to say exactly how and what.
I shall look forward to that, then.
Be sure to visit every day, multiple times a day.
Better.
You don't want to be the last one on the street knowing what's going on, because that would be embarrassing.
It certainly would be.
New off-topic moderator? Wait again, didn't we talk about this earlier? What did you say off-topic was again?
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. just that bit of the site that kind of keeps it running and keeps everyone involved.
Oh, what would you know about it?
I'm in dire danger of finding Dan funny by the end of this. It's for me.
Then you know you have to quit.
And you start examining how many hours have I been awake? So I guess you formally joined the Appleton community in October 2002 based on your forum profile. Did you visit Appleton before then?
Kind of, only very briefly. I was just ended up getting back into Alpha Centauri and did a bit of Googling for it and suddenly stumbled upon the Democracy Game and thought that was an amazingly wonderful idea. So that became my, that and my actual, university or stuff became my life for a good few months.
Yeah.
Kind of how I found it before. But no, it was really, really good, actually. I still have good memories of the first Moxie game.
Not that you'll have time for those anymore, but...
Well, we can see. I always used to argue that Democracy Game was what got me into Oxford in the first place, because it ended up getting quite heated discussions on political and economic issues, and my Oxford interview was on one of the same discussions I just had on Poly the week before.
So when you write papers, do you cite Poly?
No.
You don't?
No. No, that's going a bit too far, I think.
Yeah. It's nice that it got you into Oxford. You don't want to have to kick you out of Oxford.
Exactly. I do kind of wonder what's happening to a lot of people who were there at the time, because a guy called Archaic, who is an utter genius, just rather unsociable as well. Dear me, it's quite funny. Long time ago. I'm just more a bit worried, actually, at the moment about what the guys are deciding to choose as my new title and tagline. letting the forum decide on themselves doesn't seem like the best idea at the moment. But we'll see.
Why do you think we chose... This is not a democracy as our tagline.
Well,
we need sometimes you guys have to learn the hard way, you newbies.
I'm sure I will do. Though I am quite shocked at the response so far, actually, at how positive everyone's been.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
But then again, we've covered that. It's because you don't do anything.
Yeah.
Ah, come on. I've been a mod for how long? Like 2 days?
Yeah, you're old school now. Yesterday's news. We have other staff members that got appointed as well. Not just you. Yep, it's all about you. It's true.
It is true.
Yeah? You do have the good fortune that you're not the youngest one on the crew. At least in terms of staff seniority.
Mm, true, true.
Two people that are even younger.
Who has actually been announced as the Call to Power mods?
There are two Call to Power modders. And they've been doing, especially E has been doing a lot of good work on the source code project. And Bureau Bird has his own website with some really good modding info on there. And, I don't have time to maintain the Call to Power sections anymore. So we asked those guys to step up and take over my job, basically. My old job.
And it takes two of them to do your old job. Wow.
Yep. That's how good
you are. You're a superhero.
Yes, I am. Not going to deny that.
And, of course, we've got, is it Diadem or Diadem to announce?
I think it's Diadem.
Yeah. Not sure about that one.
Yeah, seems to hit.
Another new guy, indeed.
Seems to have hit the ground running as well. Awful lot of stuff he's done so far.
Yes. Yep. He only had PCR post-count reduction abandoning capabilities on our forums for a few moments so he could investigate Lord Shiva's account.
What happened with Lord Shiva's account?
Nothing. That he knows of.
Okay.
And he it seems he didn't know at first what that acronym was, and then we got this polymercy chain reactions, and I thought, we've just made up a new word, but it actually is a word. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I looked it up. Hooray for me. Gold star. It is an enzyme that catalyzes the formation of new DNA and RNA from an existing strand of DNA or RNA. That's the only definition I could find that was neither too long or I understood some of it. For example, I understood an, that, formation. I understood those words.
Yep, it seems you understood the gist of it then, I think.
Okay. Yep. Finally here, as a community service, for those who have not read this thread yet, I'm going to issue a level 1 IA or innuendo alert for the first page. May not be entirely family friendly.
Which? First page.
The first page of the DM's appointment. Something about rods.
Yeah. I was worrying for a second I hadn't got an innuendo.
Yeah.
That would be against precedent.
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
But it's always annoyed me when I've been playing support. That I tend to be slightly evil when I'm playing Civ. And I quite like the idea of having this nice agreement with someone, you're going on fine, you're attacking a common enemy, and then suddenly they find a big set of catapults sitting outside their city. It's quite a good feeling. And obviously Civ 4 stops you doing that, because you can't just have that sitting next to them and then declare war. And so it's always been one of those things that I thought, I can understand why they've done it for gameplay reasons, though I personally tend to think it's not, but almost from the realism aspect as well, that the fact that it doesn't let you cancel agreements, it enforces certain things. The most annoying one to me being the vassal states. You can't decide to go and attack one of your vassal states, even if they start being annoying and sort of taking your culture borders and that sort of thing. Any thoughts?
From a gameplay point of view, it's just that's the way you have to do it if you want to have a remotely competitive AI.
Mm, true with the AI, but I was thinking when it's coming to even things like multiplayer and that sort of thing. Is this sort of right that or is it good for gameplay that we are stopped from doing certain actions? For instance, should it be that certain agreements are enforced and you can't just break them because sort of for real politic reasons you're more powerful than you've got now?
Yeah, like I said, I think for AI it's necessary. In multiplayer, I guess you could disable those rules.
Can you? Is that feasible or is that have to do some more to do it?
Yeah, of course, you would have to mod it. I guess if you could implement it, it could be fun to play with. Maybe, I don't know what the consequences would be, because I'm not really a hardcore multiplayer. I'm actually not a multiplayer at all.
Same here. I saw Dedim's suggestion of mutual wars where one side won't withdraw from the conflict with the other side, also signing into peace. But I think that's worth considering. But I like Sand Monkey's idea where you could have a three-way bargaining session in diplomacy, because, you know, far too often your neighbor makes peace and you're stuck in a war with the other guy who refuses to speak to you, even if you were brought into that war by that neighbor who has now made peace.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I think, for me, diplomacy is possibly the weakest part of Civ 4. It's the one thing that I keep thinking little changes could make a really big impact on how the game is played. Obviously, I think with an AI, it's always hard to work out what you can have and what you can't have.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest drawback here, the biggest limitation. The AI is really hard to work around that.
I like Sand Monkey's in-game solution where when your friend and the enemy make peace, the enemy automatically offers you a ceasefire, not a peace treaty, but just a ceasefire that you can choose to accept or reject. And I think, as we were getting at, we can always have more diplomacy options.
True, definitely.
Yeah, I agree there. That's been on fan request list for a long time. Better diplomacy. I do think that's one area where they could improve in the future.
So, yeah, given the current circumstance, I never agree to requests from an AI civ to join a war, regardless of my relationship either with the person asking for the war or with the people that I'm being asked to go into war against. I either say no because I really don't have an interest, either in a mindset, as I'm often a builder. Imran and I are builders, as we discussed in the previous episode, or sometimes, I mean, what's the point of going into a war if you're not ready for it, particularly on defense?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting issue to look at. I think it's definitely something in playtesting that they need to look at the next time they bring out Civ 5.
Yeah, that's true.
Attacking a city without catapults.
Always a city, right?
Well, unless you have tanks. Yeah, so for those who aren't aware, what in the heck are we talking about? Adrian Hunt describes a situation where he finds himself at war with a neighbor. Sounds like he started the war, but I'm not sure. And they're down to their capital. The enemy's down to their capital, but they've built up their defenses. And Adrian's a good 15 to 20 turns away from, well, I believe he's getting at building their first catapult, although maybe he hasn't researched construction yet to build a catapult. I'm not sure. But I would refer to the suggestions provided by Ra about parking on any critical resource and see if that baits a few units out of the city. And if he strips it down to archers, for example, because those were some of the units that were mentioned in the stack, then bring in your swordsmen to take them out.
Yeah, I think Ra's got exactly the right tactic. It's more, I think, that the general question of, is it foolish early on in the game to launch a war before you have catapults? I mean, while it's possible to take really badly defended cities, all someone needs is a few archers in their city, and the city being in a good area, and you've pretty much, it's impervious to most.
Yeah, I guess it depends what you want from the war. If you want to completely destroy an enemy, then it's going to be quite questionable if you can do that without catapults and losing a whole lot of units. But if you just want to take one or two crucial cities, I just hurt them just bad enough. You could take a few cities and then kind of fall behind in the long run. And you could take the rest later when you do have catapults.
Yeah, but with the larger cities that have got too large a stack to take, you could target those that have some strategic resources and pillage. And then get the heck out of there.
True. I suppose, yep, there are a lot of options.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the suggestion about attack as many cities as possible in the first few turns of the war to avoid that buildup. If you can afford that, to launch that kind of mini-pronged attack, then by all means.
Awesome.
So I guess what we're getting down to is it's not foolish, necessarily, but as long as you have a strategy... Do we know what those are? I think so. Strategy in a strategy game? What? Apparently.
What are you on about?
I think you've got it right there, though. It's as long as you can accept the fact that there's certain cities you're not able to take, or that you're going to lose an awful lot of swordsmen and axemen, then you just have to wait until a catapult.
Yep. We're here with this week's interview. I'm here with Dan.
Hello.
And this week we're interviewing someone from the Civ2 scenario community, Kurt Sibling. Hi, Kurt.
Hi there.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who are you in real life? Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, I basically live in Glasgow, Scotland, and I work as a tutor in Paisley University, teaching 3D animation. But that's just my part-time job, full-time job, Civ2, of course, which I basically spend a lot of my time modding. But basically, yeah, I'm usually never more than 9 meters away from some sort of computer. So, yeah, I'd say probably full-time geek is my occupation.
Well, aren't we all?
Yeah, well.
Let's all join a club.
Let's start a website.
I think we did. You've been a key member of the Civ2 scenario making community for quite some time now. How did you get involved into both Civ and scenario making?
Basically, I started off playing Civ2 around about, more or less, when it came out. I played Civ1, and obviously when the second one came out, everyone else had bought it. But around that time, I only had a 56k connection, so obviously getting onto sites was not easy. But it was really Polly and Civ Fanatics were the first kind of reached out and started downloading a lot of the old scenarios at the time. But really, like a lot of other people, I guess started making scenarios for myself, just tweaking the game engine a little bit just to see what you could change. But normally what happened, I wasn't very ambitious to start with, but it was only when I started getting a better type of internet like broadband, I took the jump and put something up online. It's kind of hard to remember the actual dates and details now, but I do remember a big impact of stuff like Nemo's 2194 Days of War and Second Front. That's when I really started getting involved, because that was a big jump for Civ2, graphics and gameplay, and for scenarios. But yeah, that is as much as I can remember, because years go on, the memory starts to go.
What was that again? Oh.
Yeah, well, I'll just make a comment about oncoming senility from my
Excellent, and even your most basic scenario is above and beyond mine. I actually do have a Civ2 scenario, but I don't talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's for good reason, though.
Everybody seems to have one tucked away. There's one person who, he does scenarios, but he never releases as a Fairline. He's another very good creator, one of the best graphic makers around just now, but he keeps saying he has got scenarios tucked away, and he never shows them. And I always think, I'd love to see these secret scenarios. But I would say the very first scenario I can remember making, one called Global Power, and it was really strange. It was a bit like Civ2 Vanilla, only it started in 1950 and went on to a kind of crazy Star Wars kind of world where there was huge spaceships and kind of Gundam-type robots walking about, and I think that was about the first real scenario I made. I think that was 1998. I think quite a long time actually now I think about it. But I sometimes look at it and I think, my God, that's so bad.
You've designed a lot of scenarios over the years. What's your favorite one?
Oh, well, I do have a great love for fantasy. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan to a certain degree, but I do love scenarios where you can break the rules of I love history and I love World War II scenarios, but I do like scenarios where you're the boss and you come up with your own world, your own races. So I'd say probably the Bitter Frost scenarios I made, they're probably my favourites, I think, because I can go anywhere with them. I don't have to worry if I've put a city in every place or if Japan did invade the Dutch East Indies at a certain month. I don't have to worry about those kind of details because you're writing your own story. I'd say my overall favourite is probably one called Kingdoms of Steel. It's basically a fantasy mod I made of just vanilla Civ2, and it's quite fun. It kind of adds this sort of 15th century Europe kind of world that goes from that era up to this kind of magical world. It's quite strange. The technology is very much based on pure fantasy material, but it's fun to play. So don't have to worry about ICBMs or anything. It's just good fun. That's only on 8 multiplayer gold. I'm thinking of making a version of it for Test of Time Raw at some point, probably next year.
Okay, and what's the one you're least happy with?
Oof. I would say my least favourite probably is the one that gave me the most trouble. There was a version of Dictator, I think it was Dictator 2, first one I'd done on Test of Time, and it wasn't because there was anything wrong with it, it's just at that point I was very unused to Test of Time's. It's slightly different from multiplayer gold, it's got a lot more rules kind of a lot of more added to the rules, and I made a lot of mistakes. Like I didn't make a technology tree properly, and a lot of things went wrong, and I just ended up really just angry with the whole thing. And I said, ah, screw this. This is getting too hard to deal with. But eventually did kind of win out, but I'm sure there's bugs still in it. But obviously it's all part of the learning curve. But I would say that one gave me the most trouble. It was one of my least fun experience with Civ 2 was that scenario.
So we've been touching upon a number of themes of your scenarios now, fantasy and World War II. Within those themes or any other themes, how do you choose a topic for a scenario? Where do you start?
It's not easy to decide. With the fantasy scenarios, I usually have a story dreamed up beforehand, not fully fleshed out, but I usually know where I want it to go. It's usually a kind of loose theme. World War II, you're more constrained with history. But I would say the story for World War II, I usually try and keep it within a certain theme. I usually like to start off in the Battle of Britain in World War II, because there's about three or four pivotal moments of World War II you can start out in. Battle of Britain, Stalingrad, or the launching of invasion of Russia, all these kind of things. I'm sure there's parts of World War II genre that has not been covered yet. I mean, people have been saying to me, why don't you do a fantasy World War II where Bitterfrost meets World War II, and I thought, how the hell would I pull that off? But I don't know how I'd work that one out. I'd maybe have a scenario where a load of World War II soldiers end up in a fantasy world. I think what I really want to do next is have a sci-fi purely and go into space. Maybe Star Wars, maybe Daleks in space, I'm not sure. But I would like to do a kind of fleet combat scenario at some point. The idea of big spaceships crashing in space is pretty cool. If I could get a good map, I think that's what I might be looking at this year.
That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Do Star Trek or Babylon 5 or Doctor Who. Star Wars, nah.
Put them all into the one scenario, that'd be great. Battlestar Galactica versus everyone else.
That would be something.
That'd be quite hard to work out. I remember a creator called Kobayashi, or Kobe. He was very much into all the sci-fi engineers, and he'd done a Star Wars versus Star Trek scenario. I think it was heavily in favour of Star Wars over the looks of the events, but it was very interesting. It would cause a riot in a lot of fan websites, so I think Star Trek could never beat Star Wars, never, or vice versa. But it was very well done.
This interview was close to being over until you said.
Yep. Wait, where are you guys going? Hey, I'm completely neutral. I love all sci-fi. It's all got good merits. That's my official stance.
Okay, so you've done quite a few fantasy scenarios over the years. Where do you get the inspiration for those things?
Well, I do a lot of cartooning as well. I'm very much into 2D artwork, and I've basically created a few comics in my time. I've been involved in cartooning since 1990. One of my projects is a fantasy graphic novel I've been working on. It's like an intellectual property based in a certain world, and I do a more or less plunder that for ideas a lot. Bitterfrost is based on a sort of derivative of that kind of frosty, cold world with all these harsh humans versus all these other harsh dudes, and the big lingering threat in the north, the big bad guys that invade. That's a theme of the scenario in Civ 2, and it's a theme of the comic as well. But fantasy is as endless as your own imagination. Even if I didn't use the Bitterfrost idea, there's other crazy ideas that it's really look outside your window, and there's sure to be somebody strange that you can base a scenario on. And I get the train through Glasgow every morning, and there's plenty of fantasy creatures on the train that you can base your ideas on, believe me. One walk through Glasgow and you'll see plenty of fantastic things. It's cold and frosty here as well, so maybe that is a subliminal sort of inspiration I've got, I'm not sure. But yeah, basically, I think for my next fantasy scenario, I might go somewhere completely different. I might actually do something desert-based. I'm thinking Egypt sort of based. I have been tinkering with that idea for a little bit, so I think that's Bitterfrost. The next one might be Bitter Sun. But I would say that fantasy is as open-ended as you want it to be. That's one of the great things about it.
All right, Bitter Sun, you heard it here first.
Big exclusive, yeah.
Boo! Boo! So for your historical scenarios, how much research do you do and how do you go about it?
Well, oddly enough, I used to really scorn Wikipedia and used to say, ha, it's only people who don't have any real research who use that. Now, oddly enough, I find myself on Wikipedia quite a lot. I do obviously have quite a lot of historical books at hand. I have got quite a hefty library. Obviously, there's no better source than your fellow Civ fans as well, because when you put up a beta test on the site, you will, I think it was Dictator 4, had masses of help from people that are really useful. There's a lot of really knowledgeable guys on Apolliton Civ 2. They really know the stuff. And they are, amongst them, they've got the whole World War II covered from Allied or Axis side, so a real great source of reference. All you have to do is ask these guys, and they will give you orders of battle, they'll give you maps. It's good. That is a strength of a community, really, I would say, that you've got guys of all, they all have different areas of knowledge.
Okay. I'll use this opportunity now to plug the History Forum on Apolliton. Part of Off Topic.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that little... the History Forum, I forgot all about that aspect. I do apologize.
Well, you're forgiven this time.
I'll not slip up.
Okay, so what do you think makes the Civ 2 scenario a good scenario?
You mean what constitutes a good scenario?
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, obviously, I recently went on Amazon, I got Conflicts and Civilization again, just for sheer nostalgia, and also the fact I couldn't find my original disc, but I bought it secondhand. Mm. And I noticed that back then the scenarios, it's amazing how scenarios have evolved. There's not any part of Civ 2 now that hasn't been modded. Back then, you got a units file, you got a readme, and you got a rules file, and that was a scenario. I mean, these guys were geniuses. Some of these guys are geniuses. This is where the very first Civ 2 guys kind of cut their teeth and started making the big strides. But I would say what makes a good scenario, looking at that historical scenarios and looking at the kind of things that are done now, the first step is to make sure there's a progression of technology that gives you the illusion that there's more than there actually is. One scenario is imperialism done by Exile or Phoenix Benton. His scenario had this amazing illusion that you're playing it forever. It was like playing a original Civ 2 game. The way he had made the technologies seem to go on and on, and there was never any end. And that was one of Civ 2's big strengths, the fact that it's non-linear. It doesn't have to end. A good scenario will use that aspect of good planning to give you more than actually is in it to make you feel. I'd say also to make sure that there's nothing that trips up the actual scenario from turn one. There's nothing worse than the, as they call it, the first turn money bug, where you conquer a city and you wipe out the AI's treasury with one hit. Mm. That is because there's a reason that happens and a reason to avoid it. I would say also no cities should be set up to be starving or super abundant in food. Basically, just a proper checklist of checking the typical Civ 2 problems. And graphics are not an issue either. This is one thing I would like to take opportunity to say. People would probably think that good graphics make a good scenario. Not always the case. I mean, sometimes basic graphics, like the old scenarios I mentioned earlier, they had very basic graphics, but the gameplay was stellar. That was the main point. But I would say that there's no magic formula for a good scenario. Just good housekeeping when it comes to testing before you do the initial release. Make sure everything works. I would say the best thing it makes a scenario is that it's fun and that it represents what it's meant to represent and is true to itself. It's true to what it sets out to do. That's probably the best acme of what makes a good scenario.
So what are some of the best Civ 2 scenarios to date that everyone should try?
Oh, I don't know, should I be allowed to make this?
That's definitely comprehensive.
Yeah, I don't want to omit anyone. I mean, obviously there's tons of brilliant scenarios. I would say there is certain scenarios that stand out as classics in the Guinea. If we want to go way back, there's Up the Deadly Boots by Harlan. I could give you a checklist. The ones that everybody should play, I would say, is obviously any of Nemo's Red Front, 2194 Days of War, quite a mouthful. His World War II global scenario, Second Front. For other types of scenarios, I would say Imperialism by Exile, of course, Mongols by Harlan as well. I'm trying to think of a rounded list here, because, I mean, I think the fan of Civ 2 should just try everything. If it's something he's not seen before, try it out. But I would say there's so many old classics. Let me think. Bebro's Crossing Crescent and also his Imperium. Those two are real classics. That was so ahead of their time. There was the Seeds of Greatness as well. Now, I can't remember the author, which is rather terrible of me. I'm a bit of a loss to remember any more, but I would say, anything by Nemo, anything by Harlan, anything by Phoenix Benton. I would say any of the scenarios from 2000 onwards are all bound to be classics, because there was a certain quality control applied by fans after that time, where once Nemo had made these scenarios, that set the benchmark. They said, right, there has to be this and there has to be that. I would just say anything that interests you, but I would say those ones I mentioned are probably quite essential for your collection.
So you mentioned Bitter Sun, but you're not going to tell us anything more about it, and it's more of an upcoming project anyway. So what is your latest project, and what can you tell us about that?
It'll come as no surprise. I've kind of let hints out on Apolloton anyway. It's going to be a redux, as it were, of the Dictator series. And people might say, oh, groan, not another World War II scenario. But this one is slightly different in that I've tried to add a few new concepts to this one. Obviously, a complete graphical overhaul as well. Basically, same map, but changed. I now have an idea of mustering armies instead of actually building everything. You can build your basic garrison and tank units, but this time, if you want the special elites like US Airborne, Commandos, or Russian Guards, you really have to research a special technology that's given, then taken away, so you can research it again. And this way, it'll give the elite units a bit more, it gives them a bit more value. I always enjoyed an Age of Crusades scenario where it gave you these hero units, same with Harland's Mongols unit, the units from that. You had a Genghis Khan unit that you end up having this one unit that you don't want to lose because he's so valuable. He's the only guy who can really punch into cities. And I really love that aspect in Civ 2, when you've got a kind of precious unit you don't want to lose. So my new scenario is going to be a lot of emphasis on that, where you will build these special units, some of them once-only units, and you'll go to big lengths to try and stop them getting taken out, and they will form spearheads of your attacks, etc. Beyond Dictator, I mentioned my kind of space scenario, but I could give you a little bit of information about the Bitter Sun if you do want to know about it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, well, this time it will be set in a kind of desert surrounding, as I mentioned earlier. The human players will have a choice between, again, two or maybe three playable civs, and the rest will be just evil attackers. And basically you'll have a choice between kind of undead Babylonian guys. I'm calling this because I don't actually have a name for these races yet, fully fleshed out, and there will be a race of cat dudes who will be filling the Egyptian kind of slots, and there will be also mechanical sort of guys who fill the sort of nomadic type warriors, and also there's kind of bad guys in Bitterfrost called the Ancients, who are the kind of stock. They were meant to be just a one-off in the first version, but they've just been in every version since. So this time they're going to be invading via the desert. They're going to be featuring new units and new... They're going to be zooming about in tanks and stuff. So that could be interesting. Try fighting a tank off with a sword. That's going to be one of the big challenges in it. So it should be a lot of fun. It's completely different. The thing I love about doing new scenarios is it gives a lot of opportunities to do new visuals and new graphics. So this time there'll be lots of desert themes, lots of cool new terrain to work on, new icons. The real buzz for me is creating new content. It's always, I think that is one of the things that's kept the community going, is everybody creating new units and new graphics, and basically just trying to push the boundaries more and more every year.
Well, you know, now if a phalanx can beat a battleship, then I think a sword can beat a tank.
Yeah, that rule still stands in Civ 2.
I've not been able to find a website that lists more than one or two of your scenarios. I can sort of find them by searching Apolloton's forum history, but that's a bit of a pain. Mm-hmm. Is there any one place where we can find all of your work?
Well, because of websites coming and going, websites moving on and deleting their databases, I have been intending to basically find somewhere to kind of settle, as it were, and get everything up there. There is one place, is Scenario League's own wiki page, which has got uploading facilities. Now, last time I checked, they were rebuilding some of the facilities, and I couldn't actually create new pages. But one of my definite to-dos is to basically get everything up on the Scenario League wiki page and make that a repository for everything. Come 2007, keep your eyes on the Scenario League wiki page. That is where I'm going to lay down my hat and basically get everything up there. Because it would be nice just to have all the old stuff up as well. Because a lot of people ask me, where's Soviet Steel? Where's Kaiser and all these other scenarios I've done a few years ago? And yeah, they're all on the hard drive. I really just need somewhere to put them.
Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
I have to keep an eye on that.
And I think Wouter planned it so he could ask that last question, so he could say something on a bolt and was a pain.
What was that?
You planned that all along.
Maybe.
Feeling guilty?
If you have any questions for us, you can send them to, what was it, Dan?
Polycast@apolton.net. That's PolyCast@apolton.net.
And if you really want to humor us, send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air.
Reach us through our Skype account, the Polycast, by using Skype yourself. The call is free. Download Skype from skype.com, skype.com. You can also phone us if you prefer. In North America, call 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, call 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. No profanity or hate mail, please.
Which brings us towards the end of this podcast. Although I do think we need to have mention of Dan Q's avatar. I think it's quite an important issue.
Apparently some people think it's more important than others. Would you like me to go back to the Bolton 8th birthday logo avatar I have?
I'm actually going to slightly, what's the word, controversial here. I actually quite like the 8th birthday logo. I must be the only person who did.
I'm sorry. You seem to have lost control.
Goodbye, Will.
Oh, well. Is Marcus ever going to make another one, or is it just going to be you guys doing it from now on?
I have no graphics ability.
Neither do I.
There was a common misconception, but I did the 5th birthday logo, and that's not true. That was Dark Cloud.
Ah.
I like all of the logos, actually, except the 8th one.
With my avatar. I think we can all agree it's fine the way it is. What'd I say? Oh, I said it too fast. I'm sorry. You just have to agree with me.
Key?
I'm quite worried about what's winning in this Hick Grove's crack catchphrase. I was actually quite close. Some of the suggestions were reasonable, but this has drove on long enough is not the most intelligent one I've seen so far.
I actually like Drove the Destroyer myself. Well, even without the souls, just Drove the Destroyer, that would be a nice one if you asked me, but...
Well, if you had Drove the Destroyer, that kind of would go with your playing style, wouldn't it? You said you were evil.
I am evil, but I'm a builder type, but I build and build and build, and then sort of, I wait till someone's in a war with someone else and then stab them in the back. I just don't like front all-out wars. So yeah, I'm evil, but not really a destroyer.
Oh, so Drove the Backstabber is not on the poll either?
No.
Oh, too bad.
And so that brings us to the end. I have been Drogue, and I am Will Bramley, only a guest host today, so you will probably not hear from me for quite a while. And with me there is...
Wouter, known on the forums as Lucutus.
Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on the forums. This is our last regular Polycast episode for the year, but don't you worry, we have a holiday treat for you in just a couple of weeks' time. Thank you for joining us, Will.
Cheers for having me.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening.
And goodbye, everyone.
Record date December 9th, 2006. Edited by Daniel Danku Quick. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization 4 and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2006, Apolton Civilization site at apolton.net.